Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And we are going to be talking a little bit about current events, Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, some of the crazy stuff that's going on in the world today, stuff that's really bizarre. The world is getting stranger every week that passes by, and I'm quite honored to be able to come to you this evening and pass on a little stability, hopefully stability in terms of thinking, and maybe help a little bit people to deal with some of the difficulties that they're facing and the difficulties that are going on in the world. Mostly I talk on the show about a man named Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer. He's an 80-year-old man in Switzerland who's written something like 40 to 50 books. I believe his writings are the greatest source of wisdom on the planet. He's very nearly 80 years old now, and the book that I've read through about six times is called The Might of Thoughts, and we'll be talking about that a little bit this evening. But Billy, he lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidt-Ruti, which is about 45 minutes to an hour from Zurich, east of Zurich, in northern Switzerland, in an area which is filled with pine forests and beautiful snow-capped mountains. Billy grew up a little farther north even, in an area called Bulak, in a little village called Niederflux. And when he was about 4 years old, he climbed out a lower window in his bedroom and looked up at a beautiful starry sky. And he said, "My life exists because of the love of creation." And he saw the light which the stars emitted, but he realized that there was an invisible light that he called the love of creation. And he felt this strange longing for the distant worlds and the faraway places. And later in life, he would realize that he was getting signals or impulses from something called the universal storage banks. You see, the universal storage banks are kind of like archives. We have physical archives that exist in libraries, but we also have kind of a energetic or metaphysical archive of information that's stored in the universe. There's also storage banks associated with the solar system, with the galaxy, and with the planet that you live on. And in the center of your brain, in the middle of your brain, in an area called the superior colliculus, you have a fragment of this creation that Billy was talking about. The creation is the universal consciousness. It's the intelligence that's the driving force behind this, the evolution that's going on in the universe that we live in. The purpose of our lives is the evolving of our consciousness. And we do that by learning. And the spirit form is kind of an internal guide. It's your inner eye. It's your spiritual self. Operationally, you could think of it as a fragment of this universal consciousness. And it's, if you're an average human being from Earth, your spirit form has been around for about 4 million years. Now, if you're one of the people that came to the Earth in the ancient past in a ship, meaning a spacecraft, then your spirit form could be between 8 to 12 million years old. And what happens is The spirit form absorbs the knowledge and the wisdom from each lifetime. So your spirit form is very, very ancient. Your current material consciousness is the age that you are now. And the spirit form needs a physical life in order to evolve. So what happens is 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg of a woman, a spirit form comes out of the spiritual realm, which is kind of an energy band around our planet, and it enters into the superior colliculus of the 21-day-old fetus. And it sends its energies throughout the entire body. And that little fetus becomes alive and the heart starts to beat. Also, the new consciousness comes in with the spirit form. So you have a new consciousness with each lifetime, a new material consciousness. You could think of it, the material consciousness, in many ways as your temporary consciousness. Your permanent consciousness resides in that spirit form or is associated with that spirit form. So when the spirit form comes in, it stays in that superior colliculus in the middle of your brain for the rest of your life. And your consciousness comes in, you get a new conscious mind, a new subconscious mind, a new unconscious mind with each lifetime. Now, buried in your subconsciousness is the what you could call your evolution from the knowledge of your previous lifetimes, the wisdom associated with those previous lives, all of the evolutive values. So you come in, and subconsciously, you kind of retain the wisdom of your previous lives, subconsciously. The new consciousness, the new conscious mind, will be impulsed by the wisdom stored in your subconsciousness. It will also be impulsed by the inner eye, the spirit form. The inner eye is your spiritual consciousness. So you have two kinds of consciousness that are evolving within you. One is the material consciousness associated with this life, and the spiritual consciousness, which has the wisdom and the sum total of all your lifetimes. So the goal here in this lifetime is to evolve your material consciousness as much as possible. Because what happens after you die, the spirit form leaves the body and it takes the conscious mind with it. And that conscious mind goes into the spirit realm with the spirit form, and it's placed in what's called the overall consciousness block. And this overall consciousness block then goes through all of your experiences in the previous life, and it takes everything that you learned, like the essences of your logic and your love and your wisdom and your reasonableness and your perseverance, and your sense of love and duty and respect and honor, and all these evolutive values are kind of summarized into their essences, so to speak, and then they're programmed into the new subconscious, because that's what goes on between lives, is the kind of the evaluation of the previous life, the gathering of that wisdom, the programming the new subconsciousness, because in your next material lifetime you'll get a new subconsciousness, that has all the programming associated to your previous lives' wisdom, and your spirit form absorbs the knowledge and the energy from those previous life experiences. So this is the overall process that takes place. And if everything was just right on this planet and we had a smaller, much, much smaller population, this would take about a lifetime and a half. So if you lived 100 years, your spirit form would spend 150 years in the spirit realm, absorbing all the knowledge and wisdom of your previous life and preparing for the new life, creating the new conscious mind, the new subconscious, programming the new subconscious with the wisdom of the previous lives, preparing the unconscious mind for the next life. So, but what has happened, because we have such a huge population, spirit forms are being pulled out of the spirit realm too soon, and this whole process gets interrupted. So spirit forms come in not as prepared as they should be, and we're not getting the wisdom that we should get in the physical life. We're not able to even process what we've learned when we go to the spirit realm. So population is one of our biggest problems. Now, people will tell you, oh, there's all this space. Well, overpopulation is not a space issue, because people look at population kind of like, let me give you an example. Your house, say you have 2,000 square feet. I'll just throw a square footage out there. That's a house that you could live comfortably with 2 to 4 people in that house, 2 to 4 people. But if you look at just the surface area on the floor, you could probably fit 60, 70 people in that house. So people look at the earth the same way. They say, look at all this surface area. We could fit 20, 30, 40 billion people on the earth. But that's not what happens. If you try to have, let's just say 20 people live in your house will be trashed, completely trashed. You know, the plumbing alone will be destroyed. Imagine that many people going to the restroom all the time. They're going to use up all the hot water. There's going to be nothing in the refrigerator. Your furniture is going to be destroyed. Everything in that house is going to be destroyed with 20 or 30 people trying to live in there. Well, that's what we're doing to our planet. We've crammed almost 9 billion people onto the earth. And what are we doing? Well, what we're doing is destroying the forests and destroying all the animals in the forests. And we do not realize that by doing that, I mean, there's many, many reasons why we shouldn't do that. One of which is because we're destabilizing the climate on the planet. Because the forests moderate the weather. And when you destroy thousands of trees, hundreds of trees, there's a lot of things that happen that we're not aware of. Don't even mention the tremendous beauty and life that you just killed, and all the animals that are going to die because they're going to have no place to go. They're going to get run over by cars. Let's not even go there yet. But when the forests are destroyed, the forests moderate the weather, and the shade from the forest keeps the air from getting really hot in the summer. If you've ever gone into a thick forest, I mean, a lot of the forests and stuff in Arizona are not like this because that's a desert area. But if you go in the thick forests in the eastern United States or in the western, like Washington State, Oregon, you'll get these really thick forests. Also like that here in Ohio and West Virginia and probably Kentucky, North Carolina, a few places. where you can go into these very, very thick forests that literally block out the light. And it's much darker in there, and it's about 20 degrees cooler. That's what should be blanketing most of our, a good portion of our planet right now. But we don't have that anymore because we've destroyed it to make living space for people. You see, people, there's 7 million square miles in South America. No one can live there. It's too cold. You can't even count that. Where people go is where there's water, where there's a moderate climate, and that's usually where our forests grew. So you can take all of our large cities, New York City, Chicago, L.A., etc. There were large forests there hundreds of years ago that have been completely destroyed or almost completely destroyed. Now, besides giving us shade in the summer, the trees will interrupt the reflected light that comes up off a snowy ground surface. So that will also store, keep some of the heat in the winter there. The other thing is that when the wind blows over the top of the trees, you'll get a turbulence that forms. And that turbulence will help to create clouds, which will help rain. And we have tremendous problems with droughts now because of chopping down our forests. The other thing that happens is we have large storms because the hot air slams into the cold air. Because we don't have the moderating factors of the forest. Now I want to talk a little bit about psychological health. Because another thing that happens to people is they don't ever see a forest. They don't spend any time in nature or very, very little time in nature anymore. And that is leading to a kind of psychological damage. Why is that? Well, your inner eye, your spirit form, if you'll be sensitive and pay attention to it, it will be able to sense something. Using what's called empfinding, which is a fine spiritual perception of the love of creation. The creation radiates love. It's not a human being. It's not a heavenly father. But it radiates love. And if you're sensitive still, many humans are no longer sensitive, where they can't feel the radiating love of creation anymore. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love. But people turn away from the radiating love of creation. Only people can turn away from the radiating love of creation. That radiating love of the universal consciousness expresses itself in the beauty of the forest. So you see, as we destroy the forest and as our population grows and grows and grows, we don't get that spiritual support, that psychological boost of the radiating love of creation. Now, we are a people that are losing their sensitivity. I talked about the German word empfinding, which means to feel. It's a fine spiritual perception, and it's a perception that people are not aware of anymore. This spiritual perception comes from your spiritual consciousness, your inner eye, the part of your consciousness that never dies, the part of your consciousness that is probably at least 4 million years old. Love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. Only man can turn away from love. Only mankind can turn away from love. The infinite love of creation connects all life because in all life that love lies hidden. We are living a lifestyle that's based on a lack of understanding, an ununderstanding of not only the spiritual intelligence and the spiritual energy that's the driving force for all the evolution in our universe. We've completely lost touch with that. We don't know what that is anymore. Our religions have, how can I say this? They've obscured that real truth into the concept of a heavenly father that has created a hell and a heaven. Now, that's not the way the universe works. There isn't a heavenly father. There is a super spiritual intelligence that is not even a human being. It has no personality in the sense that we think of as a personality. It creates what are called creational natural laws. And I talked at the beginning of the show about one of these laws, which is love, but not the romantic love, which is overemphasized today. But it's a love based on reverence. And what reverence is a deep respect. And it's a reverence that understands that we're connected to all things. In fact, love will forever be the purpose for our existence. And one of Billy's contacts, a woman named Simyase, which was Billy's third contact, by the way, Semyasi said love and wisdom go together, and the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. And she said that every human has within them a spirit that does not sleep, that does not die, that records everything that you do. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong, if you've learned to pay attention to it. It's called the wonder of all wonders. The spirit form is truly an amazing thing. It's the bearer of the creative realm. There's another thing that Semyase called the spirit form. Now, what is happening on Earth is most of our evolution is the evolution associated with the material consciousness. And because of that, our spiritual evolution is way, way behind the physical, way, way behind the material consciousness evolution. So what we're doing, we're no longer trusting our deepest intuitions. And that is the exact opposite of what we should be doing. We should be trusting these inner impulses that we get from our spiritual self. Okay, Okay, let me read a little section here. And this is page 308. 308 from the book called The Might of Thoughts, which I think my thing in life is to read this for the rest of my life. I don't know why. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, this is page 308. Many human beings erroneously and imperiously believe themselves to be great psychologists and great helpers in the matters of humaneness and so forth, and think in their delusion concerning this, that they in fact are able to stand by and help others, which however as a rule has devastating results and destructive effects for those who turn towards this dubious help. Concerning this, it is certainly the obligation of every single human being to only turn to others with help and to only concern themselves with others and make themselves commendable to them when they are first and foremost able to help themselves, which can, however, only be right when they have brought their own nature and their own personality onto a level of development which is a kind and wise and true conformity with the creation. And this is what I wanted to get to. Therefore, this stipulates that the human being, first and foremost, concerns him or herself with his or her entirely own inner and outer matters and brings them into order and true conformity with creation. This is a fundamental recommendation because every human being is obliged, first and foremost, to form himself and herself according to the creational impulses. And that's what I was talking about earlier, are those creational impulses and guidelines pre-given by his innermost nature. So your innermost nature will give you impulses. And I would say maybe one example of that would be most people have a natural affinity for animals like cats and dogs, kittens and puppies, and their natural love. That is an example of getting in touch with your inner nature. Let me continue. In order to be evolutive and become a true human being, therefore, the human being has to evolutively form his or her own being, his own self, and with that, his or her own consciousness, in order to then live according to it. Because one own evolution is the most important thing in the life of the human being. Because a creational law is thereby fulfilled. So our purpose in life is our evolution. That's why they said love and wisdom go together, you see. Your purpose in life is to gather wisdom. Well, your purpose in life. Your purpose in life will, love will continually be the purpose of life. There are two different sides of the same coin, perhaps, a good way to look at it, through which the creation itself further evolves. So as you evolve, eventually you'll completely merge with creation, but as you evolve, the creation evolves. Therefore, it is the human being's obligation to direct and progressively form, according to the creational innermost nature, his/her inner nature, which must be formed by him or her. And only when this has happened in the best possible form can he/she turn to his fellow human being in an effectively helpful form and in fact give him or her those values which he or she requires. Therefore, it is not done by wanting to be helpful to others, by showing the way in things to do with conscious evolution as well as the psychology and so forth, when the necessary abilities for that have been achieved. Yet, directly in any regard, many believe themselves to be qualified and wise enough, although they cannot cope with themselves, whereby they cause enormous harm to their fellow human beings. Erroneously or arrogantly, they believe they have to intervene in the matters, problems, troubles, and so forth of others and to assist them. You know, that's one of the things that's an interesting thing, and I'm thinking about this as I'm reading this, that many times you just have to pull yourself back when others around you are struggling. And sometimes even if they're asking for your help, they don't necessarily want what you would offer them as help. Let me continue. Whereby they often cause harm and cannot be repaired again. When it is said here that the human being should, as the very first thing, be concerned and evolutive for him or herself, and that's so true, our first goal is the evolution of ourselves. And I'll continue right here. To build up one's own inner nature in line with the creation nature, and to do it progressively, as well as in a neutral, positive, equalized way. So whenever we think, we want to think neutral, positive. That isn't real positive, and it's certainly not negative. So always evaluate your thoughts. Make sure they're neutral, positive. Because good thoughts can lead to good feelings, and feelings grow out of the thoughts, not emotions. Emotions are reflexive. Like when that doctor hits your knee and your leg kicks up, that's an emotion. It's reflexive, very hard to control. A feeling grows out of the thoughts. And your feelings, your good, healthy, neutral, positive feelings, will bring good habits. And good habits will lead to good circumstances. So your thinking is of tremendous might and power, and can produce good circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own destiny, and you can literally bring about good circumstances in your life, but you first have to bring a good inner circumstance. Your inner thoughts and feelings must be neutral, positive first. And it is also certain that whoever has built up his/her inner nature with the impulses of the innermost creational nature. Remember, you have a spiritual consciousness. It's associated with your spirit form. The spirit form has a controlling factor called the Gemut in the German. And the Gemut controls the thoughts and feelings of the spiritual consciousness. Whoever has built up his or her inner nature and the impulses of the innermost creational nature and has caused it to blossom can love himself in all honesty and deference without thereby falling into negative bad states. So what we're looking to do is to maintain neutral positive thoughts. So how do you do that? Well, a neutral positive thought, you can bring it about. Tell yourself you're optimistic, you're confident, you're relaxed, you're cheerful, you're enthusiastic, and you're thankful. Now, those things right there, tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic. If you tell yourself these things, and same over and over again, I am confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, and I'm thankful. Now, what you'll do is if you start to think a negative thought and you'll feel the negative feeling associated with the negative thought, it's like a little warning coming out of your center of your being. Then if you tell yourself, okay, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, then you'll stop those negative thoughts, because negative thoughts spread like wildfire. Whosoever, I got a couple things written down from the book here, just on my desk, which comes in handy. Whoever has negative thoughts will soon allow himself to be controlled by them. Oh my goodness, negative thoughts have a way of just running rampant in your mind, and they're so hard to turn off. They're so hard to turn off. That which the human being thinks, he makes real. So if you're rotating negative thoughts, you're going to bring about a negative set of circumstances in your life. That which the human being thinks, he makes real. And that which the human being thinks about himself, he becomes. So if you want to become a certain kind of person with a certain kind of skill set, a certain kind of ability, you need to be thinking about that and focused on that. Now listen to this. He or she never ends in the gutter because of some kind of tyranny. So if you end in the gutter, about 99.99% of the time, it's because of your own thoughts. Now, people I know will hear that and say, oh, no way. Well, what happens is we have conscious thoughts and unconscious thoughts. And the unconscious thoughts are very powerful. And they're running, believe me. So always try to control your thoughts. Always try to steer them, because if you float in your mind, your unconscious will take over. And when your unconscious takes over, you'll go into bad habits and you'll start thinking bad things. Unconscious thought processes create unconscious feelings. And the next thing you'll know, you'll have feelings. You know, you'll have bad feelings and you'll be like, why do I have bad feelings? I don't even know why. Well, because you're having unconscious thoughts. Emotions can create thoughts, and thoughts can create feelings. And again, like I was saying before, emotions, they're reflexive, they're spontaneous. The unconscious state determines the feelings many times. So try to look inside yourself. And if you're feeling negative, if you're feeling weak, uncertain, then repeat the earlier mantras that I was telling you about. I'm confident, I'm optimistic. Now, you shouldn't keep in mind that the negative and the positive are put together for a reason. And they're two powers that need each other. So that's why we say we're trying to think neutral positive, because you can't eliminate all the negative. In other words, the powers kind of need each other to stay in balance. Because if you go too far positive or too far negative, you'll go out of balance and you'll go into what's called Erschwertheit in the German. The whole idea here is not to go into mental disharmony. Because mental disharmony causes our suffering to grow. So let me continue here. I really had the intention of playing all these clips tonight. Don't know how this happened. But I'll continue here. However, if the human being remains separated from himself or herself by disregarding his inner nature, okay, again, you have what's called a false self, kind of an outer nature, which is threatened by your inner nature. Your inner nature is influenced by the impulses of your spirit form. So as you evolve, part of your nature, your outer nature, so to speak, is threatened. So if the human being remains separated from himself or herself by disregarding his or her inner nature and not forming it such that it conforms with the creational natural laws and recommendations, which we just started to talk about, one of these laws is love, and that's what we're talking about tonight, then he or she separates himself or herself, so to speak, from his own life. Now think about that. If you separate yourself from the love of creation, if you go out of the neutral, positive, harmonious balance, you separate yourself from your own life. Because as a result of not developing him or herself higher, he or she distances him or herself from real life. That is to say, from his or her own real self, which is embodied by the inner nature, and from which the factor of the actual personality comes forth. and it by means of his or her own will. The human being lives apart from his or her real self, apart from the actual inner nature. If you develop confusing and exhausting thoughts, you're probably not being led by your inner nature. Then, in fact, one cannot say that in that case, the inner self can be positively given full expression. In other words, you're not giving expression to your full inner self, because with this self, one is truly only dealing with a fake self or an ersatz self. That's what I'm saying. You have a fake self, a false self, an outer nature, which is you, as you are in mental disharmony and you are no longer listening to the impulses of your inner nature, which the human being, him or herself, is responsible for acquiring, and which is only imprinted according to that which is short-lived, not idealized, ideas created and expressed, and which cannot be realized. This unnatural state, being in the state of the fake or errat self, that's you when you're outside of the harmonious balance. We all do it. We all fall into the false self. A lot of times, that's when the emotion comes cranking outward. This unnatural state, now I've done it plenty of times, this unnatural state in its unnatural, which works against these creational natural impulses within you, can naturally satisfy no human being in the long term. Your false self, your ersatz self, let me pronounce that better, ersatz self, can never satisfy you in the long term. That's why people are addicts. Because they're not living according to the true creational inner nature. So they turn totally to this ersatz self, the false self, and they live through addiction, ersatz self. And they live by the impulses of the unconscious. When you live through addiction, you're living by the impulses of the unconscious or the subconscious at times. And consequently, he or she becomes unsatisfied with him or herself. Unsatisfaction is one of the biggest problems. It shuts down all spiritual momentum. Don't ever let yourself go into that state. And gets out of alignment in some form, which naturally brings him or her inequity and harm. When you're in this mental disharmony, you're bringing harm to yourself. That the human being then soon no longer likes him or herself. You start to lose your self-respect. It is an unavoidable consequence. However, this not liking oneself anymore does not concern the material body. Rather, it concerns the self-created, unnatural inner nature. That is to say, this ersatz self, this false self. This is very, very profound information. You really have to spend some time meditating on this to really come to a true appreciation of it. Like me, I've read it. I'm reading it for the sixth time, just over and over and over again. There's another book which is worthy of many, many readings as well. It's called The Way to Live. It talks about another creational law. I'll call it the second creational law, laws of the universe. It is striving. It's the law of life. If you strive, you will survive. If you stop, you begin the process of dying. Striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation, which is a word for satisfaction. in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Let me tell you, there are times in your life where you're going to have to be striving to a level and intensity where you never thought you could work that hard or that long. Those periods don't last forever, thank goodness. But if you're going through one of those right now, hang in there, because you're fulfilling a creational, natural law that will reap good benefits. Now, let me tell you something. If you continue to examine yourself while you're going through this intense work period, maybe you're going through 70-hour work weeks right now, maybe you're working two or three jobs right now, if you can focus on trying to stay neutral positive through that time, you can actually enjoy it, which is hard to believe because it's a very difficult time. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, stagnation, hopelessness, and grief, confusion. If you stop striving, you will fall into all these things: irrationality, joylessness, cognitionless unpeace, disharmony, lovelessness, resentment. If you're unhappy right now and you don't know why, I would get to work on something. Because striving is one of these creational natural laws. If you're striving, you're fulfilling one of the big purposes for you to be here. So anyway, the lack of striving leads to cognitionless, unpeace, disharmony, lovelessness, resentment, lies, self-destruct, and reluctance for life. Therefore, delectation, which means satisfaction, harmony and happiness, as well as everything positive, as well as grief and everything negative, in the end, are only the revelation of how pronounced is the striving in any life form. You didn't know your happiness was dependent on your work. What you'll find, if you push any one of your hobbies, if you keep any one of your hobbies long enough and work hard enough at it, it tends to become a secondary profession. Depending on the degree of the strength of the striving of any single vision, it will assert itself in the world, prevail, or will fall, shatter, waste away, and come to an end and vanish. Striving doesn't even end when you die. As a human being may assume, many people think, oh, when I die, no more striving. Because striving is also included in the death. The human being strives for the life and the death at the same time, because the Grim Reaper accompanies the human being to new life and to new striving. The death is an interlude between two lives in the level of the realm of the other world, in which the striving finds itself in progress and keeps the life alive. So your spirit form is striving in the spirit realm to absorb all the wisdom that you gained from the previous material life. And then it strives to prepare for the next physical life. Creation, okay. Therefore, it is the case that the human being can learn from the unending truths and the wisdom of creation, adapt and integrate him or herself into the following of its laws and recommendations, and thereby become so knowing that the immense recognition and practical experience and therefore wisdom enter him or her, and she becomes the master of him or herself. That's one of the main goals here, is to become the master of yourself with your own power of decision, power of determination, and absolute capacity to act. But as the master, of him or herself, the human being is not able to direct his or her own morality and disposition, and so forth. And indeed, such that a favorable equalizedness arises, which all striving is controlled and directed, so that it preserves the zeal undeterred and is not subject to any wavering at all. That's our goal. The zeal is the ultimate culmination point that we're searching for, which is the evolution of our consciousness. Goal is not a good translation for that German term. It was thus, and not otherwise, since time immemorial and all the past times, but it is still thus today, and it will therefore remain so right into all future times. As long as there are human beings and living Wesen, your dog, your cat is a Wesen. Wesen is something that has its own personality. It's a life form with some kind of intelligence, its own personality, and it has the free will to determine the rate at which it strives and evolves. The universal consciousness is called a Wesenheiten because it doesn't really determine the rate at which it evolves. It evolves according to this predetermined plan. Striving requires an expenditure of effort. It must be achieved through hard work. The striving is not simply dropped into one's lap. And that again and again, there are circumstances which work against the striving. You'll notice that the universe sometimes will set up obstacles as you're striving towards some goal. And one of the things I've learned to do over time, it's just my own coping mechanism for this, is that when you, if you have the power, if it's a time where you can control your own schedule, work for a short time on whatever your goal happens to be, then take a break. And then work for another short period on something else. That something else may be just relaxing. And then go back to work on the goal that you're striving for. And then take another break, you know, so you have this on time and off time, on time and off time. And by doing that, you recreate the balance. Because what happens sometimes as we're striving too hard for a goal, we come into disharmony. And our striving, instead of leading to satisfaction, can lead to misery that way. Therefore, one's striving cannot be constantly and really gratified because there are multifarious powers which work against the striving as well. However, it is not abnormal. This is normal, that you will have powers that work against your striving. It is truthfully in accord with natural law because where there is no resistance, there's no effort for the progress. Therefore, it has to be in accord with natural law that an opposite pole is positioned against the striving. Based on the teaching of the creational law, that there must be always two poles, a plus and a minus, a pro and a con, a negative and a positive. Together, the two poles always produce a oneness, an equalizedness. This is a creational law based necessarily, which a life form will never succeed in pushing over. But this has to be delusionally attempted. Then for the concerned life form, this would mean the end of the physical existence. Therefore, connected with any striving are negative influences and machinations of an evil form, which are inseparably one with each other as our fire and heat. So we're always having a force against our striving. Put another way, this also means that no success can be attained without negative aspects being involved. which tag along during the development toward the progress. Therefore, errors must inevitably be made so that they can be recognized and resolved. That's one of the reasons why the Meyer teaching says you should work to live as long as you can, live your full natural lifespan, so you can work through these errors and maximize your evolution. Striving is the diligent impulse of the evolution's creation's drive, right up to the highest possible, relatively absolute fulfillment. Striving is life. Right up to the absolutely fully developed being, which also finds no end in death again, because out of it new life constantly comes forth with renewed striving. So that's another creational law called the law of reincarnation. Look, the destruction you do to the earth, you will not escape, because this is the planet that you're going to be evolving on for most of your evolution. Eventually, we will leave the earth and we will go to other worlds to evolve in on. But this is a good planet too, by the way. A really, really good planet. So we should take care of it. And because this is the place where we are evolving. Love is the highest principle in all creation. Right after love is striving. Striving to evolve. Your work at your day job, your work at your hobbies, cleaning out your garage are all examples of striving. And without striving, there's no happiness. Without love, there's no happiness. And without wisdom, there can be no love. You see, love and wisdom go together, and the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. Thanks for joining me. Have a great week. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great evening. Good night.